Hello, sports fans, and welcome to another edition of Yesterday Sports on the Sports History Network. And make sure to check out sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways. I have two signed books I'm giving away. One is titled No Nonsense, Old School Weight Training, and the other is Reliving 1970s Old School Football.
It's time for another Football by Numbers bonus edition of the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, and we have author and historian Rich Smelter to help us with jersey number 50. It's all coming up with Rich in just a moment. This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. This is your host, Darren Hayes, and we're podcasting from America's North Shore to bring you the memories of the gridiron, one day at a time. So with Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff supplying us with the dunes, let's go no huddle through today's football history headlines and birthdays of Hall of Famers.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com, and welcome back to the Pigpen. We tonight have another bonus edition of our Football by Numbers series. We have jersey number 50, and we have a lot of people to talk about on there. But I've got some help tonight. I've got an author that's wrote a lot about football, Rich Smelter. He is a PFRA member and has helped with the PFRA on projects like the 1966 Green Bay Packers, the 58 Colts, the 51 LA Rams. He's also wrote some books on his own, USC Trojans Football Encyclopedia, the Raiders Encyclopedia. He's even wrote books on basketball, the LA Lakers Encyclopedia, LA Dodgers Encyclopedia. And I'm going to throw a little curveball here because he's thrown at us, and we're going to ask him this in a second. The Browns, the Cleveland's team, he wrote that book too. So let's bring him in. Let's ask him some questions. Rich Smelter, welcome to the Pigpen.
Thank you, Darren. I'm looking forward to jumping right into that Pigpen with you.
You're going to get it. A little muddy in here. You know, be ready to get some dirt.
Sounds great.
Because we roll around in mud
school,
a little bit.
Old school football.
That's right. So tell us a little bit about this writing. You have a lot of things from the West Coast, and then all of a sudden the Cleveland Browns pops up in there.
The Cleveland Browns was the first book that I wrote when the Browns left town and then they were ready to come back. I thought, hey, let's take a shot because I've always wanted to write a book. So I said, let's take a shot. So I told my family I'm going to do this. And I sent out some queries. Before you know it, people were actually interested. It's like, okay, great. Now I got to write it. So it's just a book about the greatest moments of Cleveland Browns history from 1946 through 1999, when they were coming back to town. And, had a great time with it, and it got me started, got my chops going on it. And then I wrote a book about a gangster in Chicago history called Machine Gun Jack McGurn, about Machine Gun Jack McGurn called Chicago Assassin. And then after that, then it steamrolled with the encyclopedias that I always wanted to do. Of course, the Raiders highlights the first 50 years of the team's history. The Lakers also 50 years, Dodgers the first 60 years in Los Angeles. And then the Trojans, 125 years. So everything had an anniversary tie to it. So loved every minute of it. And working with the PFRA, just fantastic organization. And had a great time working on those also.
Well, great. Now, where does your interest in football history come from?
dates back to, I had a sixth grade teacher named Mr. Risch in Maple Heights, where I went to school. And he really brought me out of my shell when it came to sports, because I really wasn't interested in sports. And he made it so passionate that all of a sudden I started to take an interest in it. And at first I was fascinated with Joe Namath of the Jets, when they won the Super Bowl that year, and just thought he was the coolest until I saw Ken Stabler. And all of a sudden I was hooked with the Raiders, and it was a love affair ever since on that. And that's how it all got started. So I'd say pretty much my interest started with the merger. The real interest started with the merger in 1970 when I was a little boy.
Well, that's truly an interesting time.
I hate to date myself, but was a little kid.
I'm right there with you. So don't worry.
Okay, thanks.
But those are two great icons to get interested in. You know, Joe Namath and Kenny Stabler. I thought you were going to tell me you lost interest in Joe Namath when he put the pantyhose on, but that's a whole different story. We won't go into that.
Oh, no. He also did that commercial with Farrah Fawcett, so you can't beat him there.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah, definitely. Those are some very high profile and very well outspoken football players, you know, for quarterbacks. You know, you didn't have a lot of them back then, but those two were definitely, they spoke their mind and were in the media all the time. That's for sure.
Compliments of Bear Bryant.
Yeah, that's right. That's both a connection from Alabama. You're right. Didn't even think of that. We have a really tough journey here tonight because we have the number 50 tonight. I hope you're up for the challenge because we're going to go through here and try to come up with the most significant players in NFL history. We have 101 years to choose from, and we're going to try to find the 10 best between you and I. We're going to have to agree on this. So, you know, we can have some arm wrestling and some jostling back and forth and jockeying to get our players in there. But we want to try to come between us mutually, the top 10 best number 50s in the NFL. You up for that challenge tonight?
I sure am. Let's get dirty, Darren.
Okay. All right. Well, normally when we start, we have a little bit of a head start here because the Pro Football Hall of Fame has given us six individuals that wore the number 50 during their careers, and they're in Canton, Ohio. And they are Mike Singletary, Alex Wojciechowicz, Jim Otto, Steve Owen, Len Ford, and Ken Strong are all in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Now, I'm going to mention that Jim Otto and Steve Owen only wore the number 50 for 1 year. Len Ford wore it for 2 years, while Ken Strong, 15, Mike Singletary, 12 seasons, and Alex Wojciechowicz, 6 seasons. So just doesn't mean that we don't choose them on there, but just to give us some perspective as far as the number 50 goes.
Sounds good.
Do you want to start with any of those?
I'd love it. I would love it. I think you almost have to go number one, even though I'm a Raiders guy. You know, we'll get to that later. We'll get to that later.
Okay.
But I would say Mike Singletary, old Samurai Mike.
Oh, definitely.
Nobody studied harder, worked harder. He had a true passion for the game. He was a great inspiration, giving speeches, intense eyes. He had it all, and he was such an overachiever. I mean, here's a guy that came out of Baylor, 6 foot, 230 pounds. He lacked speed, that so they said, and he just worked and worked and worked at it. And hated to come out of games on third down situations, so he spent hours and hours of practice working on coverage techniques, and allowed him to become a complete player. He studied films. He was built like a fire plug. He had a powerful upper body, and he was in constant motion on the field, totally focused. Just an incredible run stopper. And he throws body into action anywhere, almost like a Troy Polamalu, you know, type.
Right.
And he led that Bears defense in 1985 to an NFL low 2.3 points a game allowed, and to an 18-1 record. You have to put Mike Singletary in number one, at least in my opinion, you do.
Oh, I definitely agree with you. I mean, when you're talking about him with Baylor, you know, as a sophomore, he set a record for the school with 232 solo tackles as a sophomore. Jeez. At Baylor. You know, that's and like you say, those eyes, they were just, and every time he was had a Chicago Bears game on, it seemed like they would focus in inside his helmet. And you see those eyes shifting back and forth, and you knew he was going after something. He had the prey he was stalking, you know.
It was great where he says hitting people has always been his style. So he hit a lot of people. And did you ever see the NFL film where they focus on him and he just clobbered somebody on the field and he gets up, he goes, "Now that's my kind of party." And I mean, just that little line like that. And he was just an incredible, incredible linebacker.
There's still, I think it's the Moving the Chains show on SiriusXM. They use that, "Now that's my kind of party" line. To start off every show, you know, it's part of their intro.
I'm going to have to pay attention.
Yeah. So, yeah. He's definitely a character. And I definitely agree with you. He's going to be our first one on the list. No doubt about it. He owns that. Which one would you like to talk about next of our Hall of Famers?
Alex.
I think it's Wojciechowicz, I think is how you say it.
Wojciechowicz. Now there's a rumor that, did you ever remember the old television show, Barney Miller?
Yes.
Max Gale's character as Stanley Wojciechowicz.
Right, right.
There's a rumor. I don't know how true that is. Maybe one of your listeners can lay claim to this. But there's a rumor that somehow, some way, there's some tie-in that they named that character in honor of Alex. So you never know.
Wow, never yeah. Know. The nickname was Wojo of the character, right?
Wojo, yes.
Yeah.
Just a little maybe mock trivia, maybe legend. I don't know, but it makes for a good story.
Yeah, it definitely does. That's interesting. I never thought of that.
But Wojciechowicz is one of my favorites. He came from that, even though he played for Detroit for a large amount of years, it was that time in Philadelphia in the later 40s, which is one of my favorite teams. Now, granted, as much as people tease me, I wasn't around at that time. Okay. Just from what I've read in books. But that team was amazing with Steve Van Buren running the ball. And Wojciechowicz, he was as hard as a rock. And he was one of Fordham University's seven blocks of granite, along with Vince Lombardi. He was a rugged 6 foot, 235 pound enforcer, played for 13 years. He was a hard hitting, powerful, compact, low center of gravity. And quickness, he had that quickness to blast into defenders. And he also had real surprising defensive speed, you know, for someone at that time. Nowadays, the guys of that size, they're running 4.5, 4.4, 4.40s. Mm-hmm. But, you know, to have speed at that size at that time, it was amazing. That speed allowed him to rush quarterbacks, chase down ball carriers, and he even handled pass coverage with some of the top receivers of the game, you know, at that time. So can you imagine someone that's almost like a Mike Singletary, like a fire plug, you know, built like that, going after incredible receivers. Like, you know, you had Don Hutson, you had Tom Fears, just to name two of the all-time greats. Crazy Legs Hirsch.
Yeah, that's – can imagine the defensive coordinators scheming that. You know, they'd have the offense all off balance having him go out and cover the best receiver.
And Detroit basically got rid of him for nothing. And Earl Greasy Neal, the head coach of the Eagles, picked him up off the scrap heap and – you know, he became a real comedian with the team and all too. So he was kind of a complete player on the field. He was, you know, a wild man, and off the field, he was quite a comedian. So he was always one of my favorites.
Yeah, and he's extremely well respected by history of football. I mean, he was the founder and the first president of the NFL Alumni Association, and he's also the third player in history to receive the Order of the Leather Helmet, which is a prestigious salute for individuals that have made significant contributions to the game of professional football. So that's quite an honor there too.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, I think Alex is on our list. If that's okay with you, he'll be take our second spot if that's all right.
I won't have a problem with Alex. No, not okay. At all.
Yeah, when you get the Order of the Leather Helmet, you know, only three in history. That's pretty big deal there.
Yes.
All right. What direction would you like to go to next?
I'd like to go to Len Ford next.
Okay.
If possible.
Sure.
I mean, Len Ford was again one of my favorites. When he came out of the AFC with the LA Dons, he was a great receiver. A lot of people forget about it. He was a devastating defensive lineman, but he was a great receiver also for the Dons until, you know, he came to Paul Brown's Cleveland Browns, and he was just devastating. You know, I mean, he changed all the whole defensive alignments at the time. And they said because of his abilities on the line that Cleveland, in effect, actually created the first 4-3 defense. And that allowed Ford to line up close to the ball handling action, and he had a better shot at enemy quarterbacks. He had big grasp. I mean, he was just a powerful guy, and just revolutionized that position at that time.
Yeah. But could Paul Brown, he could really notice talent, couldn't he? I mean, when the AAFC disbands, you know, the Dons disband because they weren't one of the three taken over by the NFL. And, you know, Paul Brown, he just scooped up guys like that and really made better stars than they probably were before with their old teams. And they were all
absolutely.
Around. Yeah. So
absolutely.
Real good judge of talent, Paul Brown was. And he really knew how to fit people into his schemes.
He wasn't probably the most congenial man as far as to his players, but they loved the guy. You know, I mean, of course, because he was a winner. The minute he started to lose a little bit, then all of a sudden that luster faded, and you know, Glenn Collier took over after that.
Right.
But
going back to Ford, I mean, he had his that bright moment in 1954 NFL championship game against the Lions. He picked off two passes as the Browns went on a 56-10 rout of the Lions on that game.
After losing to them twice.
Yeah. So don't tell Arnie Chapman that, because that'll break his heart, even though he wasn't alive then, but still break his heart.
Oh, no, I won't. I promise. Now that I know that, I can maybe use that as leverage on him.
Yeah. You write that down. If you need to get anything over Arnie, you can tell him that.
Already have it down.
All right. I have no problem at all, even though only two seasons wearing the number 50, but I think Glenn Ford was just that dominant of a player and that versatile that I think he ought to be on our list also.
Absolutely.
Okay. So there we have three spots filled already. See, this is a piece of cake. See?
Yeah, it's easy. It's easy. I thought that this was going to be hard.
Right. Oh, just wait. We'll get there.
Okay. Sounds good.
All right. How about we go to Ken Strong next, if that's okay.
Love with it. You. What a complete ball player. And, yeah. You know, kicking, running. I mean, he did it all at that time. Did especially that 1934 championship game, the sneaker ball or the sneaker mm-hmm. game, when they right. went up against this incredible force, the Chicago Bears. They put on those sneakers and the Bears had this cleats on and they were slipping and sliding everywhere. And Ken Strong was another one of my favorites. They said he was probably the best or the greatest all around player of all time. And that came from quite a few people, you know, that saw him play.
Now it's kind of interesting. What we do on Pigskin Dispatch, we celebrate the birthdays of Hall of Famers on every day of the year. So we have a daily podcast on that. But it's interesting that both Ken Strong and another one of our Hall of Famers that were number 50, Steve Owen, who I believe, I don't know if he coached Ken Strong or not, but they both shared the same birthday of April 21st. Not the same year, but the same birthday. About 8 years apart. But I found that kind of interesting tonight to go into that. But yeah, Ken Strong, definitely a well-rounded player. And like you said, many have said he may be the best NFL player ever. And you're talking, you know, that's some great players, you know, like Red Grange and Jim Thorpe. And there's people saying that he was might be better than them. But I don't know. I didn't have to take their word for it. I've never saw any of them got a chance to play, but in my lifetime, but you know,
they said that there was really nothing that he could not do athletically. And he was a compact, you know, 5'11", 210 pounds, but he had sprinter speed. And when you brought up Red Grange, he had the elusiveness of Red Grange and Ernie Nevers. He was as tough as Ernie Nevers, and he was just an outstanding passer, punter, place kicker, defensive back. You know who he reminds me a lot of a few years after that, about a decade later, was Bob Waterfield. I know he's not number 50, but I'm going to give a shout out to Bob Waterfield because he was married to Jane Russell, you know, famous movie star. So, you know, he couldn't be all that bad.
Anytime you can get Jane Russell in the conversation, that's we got to make the stretch and get there.
You know, kudos to him just for that. But
right.
I always thought that Bob Waterfield was probably one of the greatest complete players. And then I started to read about Ken Strong, and I came away even more impressed with Ken Strong, where he was the Bob Waterfield of his time.
Yeah. And the first four seasons, I just like saying his name, the Staten Island Stapletons, you know,
yes.
1929 yes. through 1932 before he went to the Giants. And he seems to have stayed right around New York City his whole time, you know, with Staten Island and New York Giants, NYU, grew up in West Haven, Connecticut, which is only like an hour by train out of the big city. So he stayed pretty much at home his whole football career, it looks like.
Yes.
So.
And he did a fantastic job where they said that for almost 30 years, his 17-point performance stood as an NFL title game record. You know, 17 points, I believe it was 30-13. I believe that was the mm-hmm. score. So, you know, he scored 17 of those 30 points on a frigid field and against a tough football team, you know, right. And the Bears at that time were supposed to be invincible. And, they, the Giants proved them wrong.
Yeah, I'm sure Mr. Hallis wasn't a real happy camper at the end of that game. Well, I think, Ken Strong, you've made a convincing case. I think
Hey there, football fans. This is Ross, the host of the Pigskin Tales podcast. I just need a few moments of your time to talk about the host of the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, Darren Hayes. He's expanded the Pigpen to search out information on the history of all team sports. It's a quest to find out about the competitors, teams, and places chronicled throughout athletic history through the uniforms and gear the participants used and wore. And he is taking you, the listener, with him on this educational journey to preserve sports history on the Sports Jersey Dispatch, found here on the Sports History Network. His newest podcast, called Jersey Dispatch, is all based on the jerseys that all the greats used to wear. You can find Darren Hayes and the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, as well as Jersey Dispatch, on your favorite podcast provider multiple times each week. So remember that, Darren Hayes, the host of the Pigskin Dispatch and Jersey Dispatch podcasts. It's found right here on the Sports History Network.